Anena, by this process, Purushaha, the living entity, Dehan, gross bodies, Upadate, achieves, Vimunchate, gives up, Harsham, enjoyment, Shokam, lamentation, Bhoyam, fear, Dukam, unhappiness, Sukam, happiness, Cha, also, Anena, by the gross body, Vindati, enjoys, translation, by virtue of the processes of the subtle body, the living entity develops and gives up gross bodies. This is known as the process, as the transmigration of the soul. Thus the soul becomes subjected to different types of so-called enjoyment, lamentation, fear, happiness, and unhappiness. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Prabhupada. According to this explanation, one can clearly understand that originally the living entity was as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His pure spiritual existence. However, when the mind becomes polluted by desires for sense gratification in the material world, the living entity drops into the material conditions, as explained in this verse. Thus he begins his material existence, which means that he transmigrates from one body to another and becomes more and more entangled in material existence. The process of Krishna consciousness, by which one always thinks of Krishna, is the transcendental process by which one can revert to his original spiritual existence. Devotional service means always thinking of Krishna. Manmana bhava bhad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam me vashyasi satcham te prati jane priyosi me. Always think of me and become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. This is from the Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter, text 65. One should always engage in the Lord's devotional service. As recommended in the Archana Marg, one should worship the deity in the temple and constantly offer obeisances to the spiritual master and the deity. These processes are recommended to one who actually wants to become free from material entanglement. Modern psychologists can study the actions of the mind, thinking, feeling, and willing, but they are unable to go deep into the matter. This is due to their lack of knowledge and to their not being associated with a liberated acharya. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita in the 4th chapter, text 2, evam parampara praptam imam rasa shiho vidahu sakaneha mahata yogo nashta parantapa. The supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science, as it is, appears to be lost. Guided by so-called psychologists and philosophers, people in the modern age do not know of the activities of the subtle body and thus cannot understand what is meant by the transmigration of the soul. In these matters, we have to take the authorized statements of Bhagavad Gita, 2nd chapter, text 13. Ehinosmin yatade hai komaram yuvanam jada tatade hantura praptir diras tatra namuyati. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Unless all human society understands this important verse in Bhagavad Gita, civilization will advance in ignorance, not in knowledge. Okay? Anena purusho deham upadyate vimunchate harsham shukam vayam dukham sukham chanena vindate. So, Om Gana Timurandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuram Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, what is being presented here is basically something called sambandha. That means understanding basically who you are and ultimately who you are in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's three divisions in Krishna consciousness in this particular context. There's sambandha, avideya, and prayojana. Sambandha means basically understanding things as they are, the relationship of the soul, to the super soul, the subtle body, the gross body. Gross body is this thing that you see. And reincarnation, transmigration. And it's a very important topic. It's not that one should immediately jump to the higher aspects of bhakti. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita, you have different parts of the Bhagavad Gita that are dedicated to different subject matters. Sometimes it's explained that the first part of the Bhagavad Gita, that's the first six chapters, are devoted not exclusively, but to a certain extent to karma yoga. And the last six chapters are devoted to what? Does anyone know? No scholars of Bhagavad Gita here. To Jnana Yoga. And the middle six chapters are devoted to Bhakti Yoga. Okay. Although it's not exclusive, that means there are things about Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga in the first part, and there are plenty of things about Bhakti Yoga in the first part, and also the last part, there's plenty of things about Bhakti Yoga like Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto, the verse Prabhupada quotes here, and you know, Sarva Dharman Purichaja. But it's pretty much the concentration of those three things in those different areas of the Bhagavad Gita. It's under, the acharyas explain in that way that the Bhagavad Gita is divided. Sometimes Prabhupada will say the essence or the nectar of Bhagavad Gita is in the middle six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. So, and you can study that. And of course, the middle six chapters ends with chapter 12, which is a really wonderful chapter in which Krishna advises us to always think of him. And then if we can't do that, then at least do bhakti yoga. And if you can't do that, become detached from the fruits or your activity or work with detachment. So very interesting how the Bhagavad Gita is broken up. So here in this particular verse, we're dealing more or less with jnana, as I said before, the sambandha. And this is part of jnana was called, as I mentioned yesterday, samkhya. Samkhya, as we mentioned yesterday, what is the definition of the word? Does anyone remember? Count. Remember that. It means count. Just like Parashuram Prabhu mentioned that it means to take a census, like they will do a census in India, how many people are there, and that's called Sankhya. So it means count. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, be a little philosophical today in class, and talk about what's called the six philosophical understandings in Indian philosophy. It's called the Shaddarshanas, you know, the six darshans. Darshan means to see, or six ways of seeing reality. So we mentioned yesterday that Sankhya, the six come in pairs. You know, pairs means two. What goes along with Sankhya? Does anyone remember what we talked about yesterday? Yoga. Okay, so Sankhya goes along with yoga. And now the other four are quite interesting. Then let's go with Nyaya. Does anyone know what Nyaya means? Logic. It means logic. Like studying how to present an argument. Most people are not logical in the way they present an argument. They don't understand what's called a syllogism. That's a fancy word. You don't have to remember that to go back to Godhead. But it just means how to derive one point from another point. That's all. That's what a syllogism means. And I'm not going to get into the details. So, nyaya means logic and reasoning. And actually, that's the basis of all the Vedic philosophies that nyaya is utilized. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was a young devotee or a young person exhibiting his youthful pastimes, he was very expert in nyaya. Using logic and reasoning, he could actually defeat anybody. Even he defeated the devotees. And the devotees would run away from Lord Chaitanya. Yeah, they would go to the opposite side of the street. They would avoid Lord Chaitanya because Lord Chaitanya was so expert. And actually, that's what the Mahabharata says. Tarko patishta shutina vivina. It says that with argumentation and logic, you're not going to be able to establish anything about the absolute truth. Nor by even tarko patishta shutina shutana vivina, nor by even reading the shrutis. That's the Vedic literatures. And ultimately, the conclusion in the Mahabharata is Mahajanayena Gathasapanta, only by following in the footsteps of the self-realized personalities in the path, like as Prabhupada would say, the path chalked out by the Mahatmas, Mahajanas. So you have this Nyaya, and that goes along with another aspect of Vedic philosophy, which is called Vaisheshika. Does anyone know what Vaisheshika is? It's actually very important. The reason I'm mentioning this is that it's important for the devotees who are preachers to know the six darshans. Prabhupada said that. Anybody who wants to become a guru or a preacher in Krishna consciousness should understand these six darshans, these Vedic darshans, because every other understanding falls under these six darshans. You know, it's a sub-category under one of these main categories. And if you ever go to India, if you have a discussion with people, they will actually want to talk about these six darshans. Okay. So the next one is Vaisheshika. Vaisheshika basically means animism. That's how Prabhupada describes it. Animism means, basically, you have modern science where they say everything is functioning as because of a combination of atoms and molecules, and of course now they've gotten a little more sophisticated with subatomic particles. You know what a subatomic particle is? That means it's smaller than the atom. But even smaller than that, they have all sorts of weird names for the particles. Their discovering is they accelerate subatomic particles faster and faster. They actually have a what's called an accelerator. Accelerator means that they take the subatomic particles and move them faster and faster and faster. Cyclotron. What's that?
Cyclotron.
They even have your cyclotron, but even better than the cyclotron, they have something in Europe that actually traverses several different countries. And it's many, many kilometers long. And it just goes around and around and around. So anyway, so that's like atomism. And also very similar to that is some understandings of Buddhism. Because Buddhism, it's interesting that the scientists often become Buddhists. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Because it means that the Buddhists say that, you know, everything, all matter is in flux. All matter is changing. Or as they say, one of the original Greek philosophers said, you can't step into the same river twice because the water is flowing. So matter is flowing. So many Buddhists have this particular understanding that matter, it's simply energy. Everything is simply moving all the time. And if you look at things in the subatomic level, that's actually true. That things are always moving and you can't distinguish between matter and energy, and matter and energy are interchangeable. And we say that energy is Krishna's energy. It's the Shakti of Krishna, right? Krishna's Shakti Mam, and the energy is the Shakti. I hope I'm not boring people with too much philosophy today. So anyway, so that's Vaisheshika philosophy. So we covered four of them so far. Everybody got that? Try to remember that. You know, if you can take notes, of course you don't take notes. Nobody here takes notes. So, Prabhupada said if you write something down, you remember it. I know if you go to the university, people write things down at the university. Why? Because they're worried about making money later on in life. But in Bhagavatam class, nobody writes things down because they're not worried about going back to Godhead, right? But we should study these things. When I first joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we had to write things down. We were questioned continually in class. Did you understand what happened? Please explain it. And then you would understand philosophy. So the devotees need to study more and listen more and not just like sit in class because they're supposed to sit in class and let things go one ear out another ear. This is very important to understand these things. I mean, you may say, I just want to hear about Krishna's pastimes. But to understand about this material nature is extremely important so you don't become a sahaja. And also because you can preach. I mean, I know because of Prabhupada's mercy, I can go anywhere in the world and talk to anyone in India or anywhere else and prove the superiority of Krishna conscious philosophy. Okay, so let's get on to the last two darshans. And these are a little more interesting for me. The last two were called Vedanta and Mimamsa. So Mimamsa is very, very interesting. That's traditionally called Karma Mimamsa. And Karma Mimamsa is more or less what the Arya Samaj people follow. You've heard of Arya Samaj before? They don't really believe in God or transcendental world, but they do believe in many of the rituals. Right? They perform the Vedic rituals, a havan, a fire sacrifice, and there's no transcendental understanding. They believe that if you do everything properly, now this is the essence of Karma Mimamsa, that if you do everything properly, what? Then you'll get a good result. It doesn't matter if there's God or demigods, because if there is God or if there are demigods, they have to do function according to karma. In other words, they have to reciprocate with you whether they like you or not. Even if they hate you, they have to give you a good result. It's just like, let's say, example, you go to the store and you buy something. It doesn't really matter whether the salesman likes you or not, because they have to sell it to you. Of course, in the material world, it doesn't always work like that. Sometimes if they like you, they give you a discount. But it's like I was in the airport in New Zealand. I wanted to change some money in New Zealand. I went to the change counter and I said, "Your rate is horrible." You know, the rate that they have posted, and it's interesting. He changed it for me. Just a little hint, you know, in case you're changing money in the airport. You can bargain for anything. I realize that. You know, sometimes you think things are fixed, prices are fixed, you go into a place and just, no, you just like bargain. It's fun, it's like being in India. So, getting back to the point, That's basically the Karma Mimamsa philosophy. Arya Samaj has the same thing. You do your sacrifices, everything, your life will be fortunate. There's no God. And even if there is, you know, he's a secondary to the karma. So then the last philosophy that we have, of course, is the Vedanta philosophy. And Vedanta has two branches. Vedanta is sometimes called Uttara Mimamsa. And the Karma Mimamsa is called Purva Mimamsa. I think you all know the difference between Purva and Uttama. Uttara? No? Purva means the beginning, right? You have a similar word in Hindi? Purva? No. It's Sanskrit. It's pure Sanskrit. Maybe it's there. Maybe it's there in Shoot Hindi, but maybe not Fiji Hindi. So, purva means like the beginning, the basic, or whatever. Purva, to begin something. And uttara means the highest. Or uttama, uttara. means the highest Mimamsa. So Uttara Mimamsa is Vedanta. And Vedanta has two branches. One is the impersonal Vedanta, which was taught by Shripad Shankaracharya, and the other is the personal Vedanta, which is taught by Ramanujacharya, our great acharyas, Ramanujacharya, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarkacharya, etc., the four sampradayas. So you have these two Uttara Mimamsas. So we are followers, of course, of the Uttara Mimamsa taught by in Lord Brahma's sampradaya, taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So anyway, so this is a little bit of explanation of the Shad Darshanas, the six, got it? Six Darshans. So it's important for everyone to understand that. So getting back to the verse here about this soul, the subtle body, and the gross body, there's a very similar explanation in the Bhagavad Gita about how the soul carries the conceptions of life through the subtle body from one lifetime to another, just like the... Give me the explanation. Someone should know this verse. Just like the blank carries the blank. Is it a Bhagavad Gita test for you all? The conceptions of life are carried from one gross body to another, just like the blank... fill in the blanks. Air carries the what? Aroma. Got it. You should all study Bhagavad Gita. I'm asking these questions to show that the Bhagavad Gita has not really been studied that much. When I was a brahmachari, I would read one chapter of Bhagavad Gita every day as part of my sadhana. And when you read it every day, it becomes part of your language. Everybody understands that? You think in terms of Bhagavad Gita. That's called Shastra Chakshush. That's one of the reasons why it's important to regularly read Shastra, so that you think and you see in terms of the verses in Bhagavad Gita. And I would pick one particular verse in Bhagavad Gita every day when I went out to preach Krishna consciousness and concentrate on that and preach to people on the basis of that verse. And that's how I learned Bhagavad Gita. I never sat down in a Bhakti Shastri class. I don't think any time in my life I took a class in Bhagavad Gita, other than the normal Bhagavad Gita classes at night in the temple. But I applied it practically in my life. So if you can do that, you will remember these verses in Bhagavad Gita. To me, it's just like another language, Bhagavad Gita language. Okay. So the air carries the aromas of a flower from one place to another, so the subtle body carries the desires, the impressions. And not only desires, impressions, but also the fears. And we're talking about different irrational fears that people have. Like there's something called claustrophobia. Anyone's heard of that before? Does anyone know what claustrophobia is?
Close.
Yeah, close. That means when you get in an elevator, what happens? Does anyone know? Someone who has claustrophobia, when they get in an elevator, or you call it a lift here, sorry. Got to change my language. You don't know what an elevator is. You get in a lift, and the door closes, what do you feel? You start shaking in fear. Or, just like what the temple president... Tell the story. Temple president in New Zealand, he did this bungee jumping recently. You know what bungee jumping is? He got on the top of the Sky Tower. You know what the Sky Tower is in New Zealand? And he had pictures taken of it, and he put it on his Facebook page. And everything. So you saw the pictures? And he was there. And then many of us, if we have fear of heights, what will happen? So he said some of the people didn't want to do it. Even after they had paid for it, they just freaked out, what we call chickened out. You ever hear that expression, chickened out? But he had no problem. He just went ecstatic. And he said, Maharaj, you should come. And I said, no, because people will criticize me all over the world for jumping off the Sky Tower. So Anyway, the point is certain people have these fears. Fears of heights, fears of closed places. Fear of water, isn't it? Is that somebody? Water. Like if they look at the ocean, they start shaking. So these irrational fears come from the subtle body, from last lives. Unless there's some explanation in this life that something happened, that means in the last life, maybe they fell off a mountain. Or they were crushed to death between two stones. And that's why they're afraid of, you know, closed places or high spots. So you take these fears, and not only fears, but even physical deformities or physical challenges. Like if someone has a backache, maybe it's because he got hit in the back in the last life. So it's really interesting how the subtle body experiences we have shape the subtle body, and in this way, they influence our psychology and even physical well-being in this lifetime. You know, stomach aches and things like that. Sometimes, what is that called in medicine where you can't find the reason for some particular disease? There's a technical word, and I forget it right now. And it sounds real fancy. You know, the doctors say, you have this, and it's because of this. But it just means we don't know the hell why you have this. I'll have to look it up in the dictionary later on. Idiopathic. Yeah, idiopathic. Thank you very much. So this is an idiopathic disease, you know. And so the person is thinking, yeah, it's an idiopathic disease. It just means the guy's an idiot. So, no, not really. It just means it's from the mind, basically, right? Because you can't find, you know, someone has like stomach problems, but you look in the stomach, you put a scope in the stomach and you can't see anything. It's just idiopathic. What's that? Quite common, yeah. And then you just give them a sugar pill and they're cured, right? So that's called the placebo effect. So in any case, these little things are all from past lives. So we have all these impressions. Here's the point. We have all these impressions from the past lives, not only from this life, but from all the different past lives, and these are considered by devotees to be dirt on the heart. You know, things that are... It's just like if you went out and you never took a bath. Can you imagine if you went your whole life, and at least for a year, and you didn't take a bath? What would happen? You, of course, you'd smell bad, but... you'd be extremely dirty. So we're actually going through this material world, life after life, and we basically, until we come to Krishna consciousness, we haven't taken a bath. And we're extremely dirty, and we smell bad, you know, spiritually smell bad. And so the chanting of the Lord's holy names, Cheto Dharpanam Arjanam Bhava Mahadvagni Dharpanam, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains in the Shikshashtaka, are to give like a bath. Literally, it's a bath for the soul, for the subtle body. It cleanses the heart of all the impurities that have been collected from lifetime to lifetime. So in other words, by chanting, you can even overcome your idiopathic problems. Interesting, isn't it? By chanting, you can overcome your psychological problems. Like, I remember Prabhupada had to confront some devotees who were psychologically challenged. That's a new modern expression for crazy. So, you don't say people are crazy anymore. You just say he's challenged individual, right? You do that here too. Because it's not politically correct to say someone's loony as a tune, you know. So you say that challenge. So Prabhupada would approach people who are psychologically challenged. And so sometimes when we see the devotees arguing in the ashram, we say that they're... emotionally challenged or relationally challenged, right? It's not so heavy. So Prabhupada would just tell them, chant Hare Krishna, just sit down and keep chanting because it dissolves the subtle body. There's another explanation given, that devotional service dissolves the subtle body. In other words, gets rid of all these anarthas, all these different coverings. And when you get rid of the coverings, you clean yourself then you can perceive reality as it is, which is, you know, Ham Sarvasya Prabhu Madhak Sarvam Prabhu. Krishna is the source of everything. You can see Krishna as everything. Just in the same way, I mean, just recently, we had a doctor who got rid of the stuff from my ears, the wax from my ears. He put in, you know, he cleansed the heart. Anyway, he had this syringe, and he went, it was painful. It was like devotional service sometimes painful. So syringe, and then out came all these, whatever, earwax. And I could hear. Or you go to the optician for the first time, and you can see. So in the same way, the chanting of Hare Krishna enables you, prachaksha bhagavam dharmyam, shushukam kartamavyam, to see reality. So this is our process, to cleanse the subtle body, and then we don't need to take any more gross bodies. The reason you're taking gross bodies is because the subtle body has desires. That's why. So, any questions or comments?
So, desire is not intrinsic to the soul?
It's not intrinsic to the soul. The soul, intrinsic to the soul is Satchidananda, you know, eternal, full of bliss, nature. But when the soul that has the original desire, Krishna Bahirmukha, he turns his face away from Krishna, then he takes a subtle body. And then the subtle body has all these different desires. And because the soul is identifying with the subtle body, he thinks he has these desires. It's all identification. It's like virtual reality. Some of you must have seen that movie Matrix.
So,
right?
Do you mean that the spiritual world, we don't have desires?
We have the soul's desire are to please Krishna. But those desires become covered and reflected, just like you have glass that's different color. The white light becomes manifested as different colors because of the filter of the glass. I'm looking at the glass up there on the top in the temple. So it's all white light outside, you know, roughly white light. And I see like orange, I see blue, I see yellow. It's all different colors, but it's white light because of the filter. And the soul misidentifies himself with the body, but he's so much attached that he's confused. He can't understand he's different from the body. I mean, it's the same, in the same way people play video games nowadays, right? Even we go to Lambasa where the devotees have this internet cafe, and it's filled all the time. Even in little Lambasa, you know, and with people playing video games. It's not that everybody's doing email. And in some places, people die playing video games. And in other words, they sit there, they forget to eat or sleep, and they just keel over and die because they're so absorbed in that other reality. So we are so absorbed in this reality that we're dying. Not literally, but figuratively, spiritually dying. This is not real. It's just temporary. It's just, like we said in the beginning of class, like the nature is always changing. It's endlessly mutable. That's what Krishna says. It's endlessly mutable. It's always changing, always in flux. Although we think it's static or stable. I'll give you an example of glass. Did you know glass is a liquid? Did any of you know that?
Super cool.
Yeah, glass is a liquid. If you stay around long enough, you'll see it start to flow. Did you know that? Anybody here know that? Shriniketan knew that. That's why if you go to an old house, the glass is actually distorted and bunched up. You see the glass flow. But it's very slow. In the same way, you know, we don't observe the changes. Of course, you know, if you see a picture of yourself 10 years ago, it's not that slow. You know, sometimes I go to devotees' homes and there's a picture of me on the altar and I say, who's that? Or, that was a handsome young man there, you know. I said, what happened to him? Right? Changing bodies. So, or sometimes when someone's planning to get married, I say, first of all, meet your wife's mother. That's who you're going to be married to in 20 years from now. So, but we don't see, the changes are so subtle day to day that we don't notice. Through modern photography, you can notice it. Right? It's like you can go to your father. Your father's old, his teeth is missing and everything like that. And he was once young. He was once running around looking to the girls, you know. What happened? But the changes are so slow that it's hard to notice the changes. Anyway, so that's the point. But we're so attached to this virtual reality that, you know, we don't pay attention to our real self, which is the soul and Krishna. So any other questions or comments? Anyone else have questions? Yes, Sumukh. Yeah. Lift, not elevator.
Yes, because of the past life.
Yeah.
How do you get rid of these fears?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You chant. I mean, just like many years ago, I was very much afraid of heights. I would just look down, even from in my room, not since I've been here, but even from something so high, and the ground would seem to move. Anyone have that experience? And you get dizzy just looking down. But since I've been chanting, that fear is not there anymore. Because you get, that's one of the anarthas, in fact, fear. And it's irrational fear. I mean, that means it's not logical fear. There's no reason. And perhaps in the last life, you know, I was a bird and I fell down or something like that. And so we have dreams. Prabhupada said sometimes we put together things in dreams, like we have gold and then a mountain, and you put together and you get a gold mountain, Prabhupada said in dreams. Or you dream of flying in the sky, right? Because you were a bird. Or maybe I was one of the monkeys fighting Kumbhakarna and I fell to the ground or something. I don't know. So, in any case, it's not really important to understand what one was in the past life. And people are very enthusiastic. You know, for preaching, sometimes I do this thing called past life regression. And the devotees, they just want to line up and get, you know, they just come back. Can you do this for me, Maharaj? Can you do this for me? I mean, I wouldn't be doing anything with my spiritual life. I'd be very wealthy. You know, I could charge $100 more. Find out who you are in the past. I mean, I could get all the more devotees than we have in Bhagavatam class. I could get here in Fiji if I advertise, you know, you can find out who you are in your past life, right? And anyway, so it's not really important. Whoever you were, live at the present serving Krishna. I mean, whatever you were, you've gotten Krishna's mercy now. Count your good fortune. Don't look at your bad fortune from your past. So, but still, Prabhupada did comment that sometimes we have these different mental attitudes because of past lives. Or sometimes someone is a born piano player because in the past life they were playing. You have some of the expert piano players, like Mozart, you know, expert composers. They were doing it at 5 years of age. Can you imagine that? It's called the child prodigy. Everyone heard of that expression? That means when a child is able to do things that adults can't do. And you got people in Fiji who are practicing music for 50 years and they still can't chant. Right? I've seen it, heard it. And you got people in... and so Mozart, you know, like, isn't it? At 5 years old, he was playing music like unlike anybody else has heard before. So that's from past life. Or doctors, too. Sometimes people were doctors in their last life. Or people, whatever. Or sannyasis in their past life. So we don't want to get too much into past lives. So any other questions or comments? Yes, Madhurang.
When we are born, they see your
Yeah.
And they pay what reparation you will be.
Yeah, because that's because of past lives. Yeah.
So if you improve your negative part, the positive is always there. So if we start into the positive thing, we improve our negative part.
Well, in Krishna consciousness, we don't worry about the horoscope. Because
in Krishna consciousness, all your negative part will be removed.
Yeah, Prabhupada said, with the tip of his toe, Krishna can kick away millions of Rahu planets. And every time you dance and chant, clap your hands, the lines on your palm change. But still, devotees are so interested. You know, I tell the devotee, I know how to read palms. You know. And as soon as I say that to devotees, they line up at my door. You know, tell me, how many wives will I have? I said, just get married to Krishna. So, and we don't pay so much attention to that. Like Prabhupada sometimes would say, let's see what the astrologers say, let's have a good laugh. Finished, yeah. There's until they become fully purified, there's still impressions from the past lives. And the karma is nullified in the sense that Krishna reduces it and directly applies it rather than it being the mechanistic aspect of karma. In other words, Krishna, it's a token reaction. Token reaction means Krishna reduces it, just like if someone goes to the court and they've done some crime and the judge says, you know, we're going to give you a slight punishment instead of the punishment that you would normally get because this is the first time you've done it. What's it called? First-time offender? First-time offender. So the judge says, you know, here we're going to give you a suspended sentence, but still you have to do some community. We have this in America, too, that if someone does something bad first time, they'll say you have to do some community service. You have that here, too? And we have arrangements with the police department so that community service can be in the Hare Krishna temple. So we get a lot of interesting people doing service in the temple. Yeah. Anyway, so Krishna reduces. It's directly Krishna. There's no more Prarabdha karma. Finished. Even if you go to see Rath Yatra, there's no more Prarabdha karma. If you follow Lord Jagannath, if you pull the cart, no more karma just by doing that. However, if you go out and do sinful activities again, then you get more karma. So, just by chanting Namabhas, accidentally you get rid of the karma, right? Namabhas means you're meaning something else when you're chanting. Like you say the name of the PM here, you become free from karma. Just by saying the name of the Prime Minister. Pretty good, isn't it? Real pious country. And but then it's token reaction at that point. Or by taking prasadam. That's why we have prasad distribution. So, I think it's time. So, we're waiting for the pujari. So we can take a quick question while waiting for the pujari to come out. What's that? A small warning. The pujari. First warning. Okay, you're late. That's the first warning. After three warnings, you're out. Yeah. That's an aparada, that's not karma. Aparada means an offense, so it covers you, but it's not karma.
It is Vaishnava.
It's Yeah, we have to be very, very careful. Prabhupada wanted us to resolve our differences internally. It's like a family. Let's say you're having some problem with... where's Maruti? Let's say you're having some problems with Maruti. It's not that you go on the Facebook and talk about it. He says, you know, this Maruti, he doesn't listen to me anymore. He's a da-da-da-da-da-da-da. No, you handle it internally. I mean, internally means, you know, you call for your wife, and if that doesn't work, you call for me to speak to Maruti. And if you don't, that doesn't work, what do we do? You take away his computer. And if that doesn't work, nothing will work. Right? Okay. All glorious news, divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, be generous.